Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thank you for tuning in. I think we'll dedicate this program tonight to Scott Olson, the Marine vet who spent two tours in Iraq and came home and was given a skull fracture and a brain concussion by the Oakland Police Department. This hour is sponsored by Mark Stracker. And he has a message here. Those interested in Major General Smedley Butler, you've heard me talk about him on this program a lot, should consider buying the newest biography entitled Smedley D. Butler, USMC, written by Mark Stracker, our first hour sponsor. It's available at Amazon.com. So go to Amazon.com and find the new book about Smedley, General Smedley Butler, United States Marine Corps, and read Mark Strecker's book. I'm sorry, Mark Strecker, S-T-R-E-C-K-E-R. I got an email right before the program. It says, Mike, this is from Occupy Oakland participant. Mike, if you could announce, we, the occupiers of Oakland, are reassembling, as I type, all in earshot of this radio broadcast, head on down to the plaza for a general assembly. So far, there are about 300 of us here, with hundreds more pouring in. So for anyone who wants to go to the plaza for the Oakland Occupy, or Occupy Oakland General Assembly, and you're not aware that this meeting has been called, now's the time. Later on tonight, I'm going to talk about what has happened to what has happened regarding the response by the authorities to the Occupy movement and what the Occupy movement can expect from this point on out. This is from Occupy Edmonton, Canada. Their email is occupyedmonton.org. This is for immediate release, sent out this afternoon. Occupy Edmonton would like to extend our solidarity to the people of Occupy Oakland. We've been shocked to see reports of extreme police brutality that occurred at the Occupy Oakland camp on 25 October 2011. Occupy Edmonton condemns any acts of abuse committed by any law enforcement agency. Our hearts go out to the family and friends of 24-year-old Iraq War veteran Scott Olson, who is currently in stable condition after being struck by a police projectile, and all Occupy Oakland people that were affected by the police crackdown. We will be holding a candlelight vigil tonight in Edmonton to express our hopes for Scott Olson's speedy and full recovery. Edmonton is in Alberta, right? Then there's still time for this. You got about a half an hour. I think they're in Pacific time. 6:45 p.m. local time. At Occupy Edmonton Park. Oh, it's at Park and Jasper Avenue. Or no, excuse me. It's at Jasper Avenue and 102nd Street. Jesus, confused a little bit, Malloy. Occupy Edmonton Park, which is at Jasper Avenue and 102nd Street in Edmonton, Canada. And that is about a half an hour from now. This is going to shock you. A five-hour Irvine, California, that's in Orange County. A five-hour Irvine, California City Council meeting ended with the council unanimously agreeing that the Occupy tents on the town hall's lawn are, in fact, a form of free speech. And the city council vowed to add the needs of the 99% to their official agenda, the council's agenda. Afterwards, the mayor asked the protesters if they needed any more blankets. The council members each spoke in turn to the civility, articulateness, and peaceful process represented by the Irvine occupation at contrast with the several other occupational villages in California which were at that very moment being tear gassed. The general sentiment being, quote, this is quite clearly the model and the occupation most in tune with city needs, end quote. One councilman stated clearly, quote, I disagree with most of what you're saying, but you've clearly shown that this is an issue of free speech. So if you sleep on our lawn, by all means, sleep on our lawn. Shortly after, a motion was brought to the council to grant license to the occupiers to occupy the public space overnight, citing the unusual form of the movement. That's got to be a first in Orange County. Not sure what it means, except what it means. We have a couple of things tonight from Prairie 2 and a moment with Bob. Last night during the final hour, I told you a story of a crazy man from Georgia, from not far from Atlanta, who decided that he would join a group that would pick a courthouse in rural Tennessee, invade it, take it over, all in an attempt to force Barack Obama, 600 miles away, to resign. And because the guy that I was talking about was a typical blabbermouth, an uneducated, and by uneducated, I'm not talking about formal education, I'm just talking about not educated. Because of his blabbermouth, of course, the cops were waiting for him, and he's now facing up to 5 years in jail. Anyway, I told you that story. I got an email from Mark in Fort Worth, Texas about that. He said, Mike, great story, by the way, on the topic of freak shows in Tennessee. Sometimes these good old boys and their antics are funny. Other times, not so much. Recall Jim David Adkinson, who marched into a church on July 27th, 2008 in Knoxville and fired his shotgun, killing two people and wounding seven. A sworn affidavit later conducted by law enforcement had the following to say about Adkinson, quote, he had targeted the church because of its liberal teachings and his belief that all liberals should be killed because they were ruining the country, and that he felt that the Democrats had tied his country's hands in the war on terror and that they had ruined every institution in America with the aid of major media outlets, end quote. As KnoxNews.com pointed out, on Adkinson's reading list were books by Bill O'Reilly, Michael Savage, and Sean Hannity. And his statement sounds exactly like one of these right-wing bastards would say. A bastard like Beck, or a bastard like Hannity, or a bastard like Savage, or a bastard like Bill O'Reilly. This is what they do. This is what they do. This is what they are paid enormous sums of money to do. Agitprop. We'll be right back. Steve in Portland writes, Mike, I've tried to find out but can't seem to get a peep about how the American Legion is supporting or not supporting Scott Olson. Might be a point for your show, Steve in Portland. I doubt seriously if any of the established veterans organizations, VFW or the American Legion, will support. Individuals might. You have to go to Veterans for Peace and Iraq Veterans Against the War and Vietnam Veterans Against the War. You have to go to those organizations who understand the horror of it all. By the way, ExxonMobil announced their third quarter profits late today. Third quarter. The third quarter profit rose 41% to $10.3 billion. Last quarter, it was $7.35 billion. Wall Street analysts expected Exxon to earn $2.12 a share. They actually earned $2.13. $10.33 billion. And part of the reason, of course, is the incredible rise in oil prices. $10.33 billion. Here's an email from somebody. The Occupy Oakland movement has proved one thing, and that is that violence, no matter what side it comes from, does get the attention of Americans. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse, but it does get attention. Americans do not respect peace. Violence is part of the American DNA and psyche. The entire world spotlight is now on Oakland, even if for a short moment. Martin Luther King even realized toward the end of his life that perhaps his nonviolent movement may not be working and began to question his own strategy, and that is when they killed him. Oh, and by the way, many may not know this, but even Dr. King owned a gun. Yep, he owned a couple of them and used to keep a rifle stashed in his couch. Sorry, Mike, I'm not typing all this in uppercase as a shout, but it's easier for me to see since I have bad eyes. Okay. Okay, I think I heard one time that King kept a shotgun close at hand or a rifle close at hand.
Didn't help.
Yeah, it didn't help very much, did it? I want you to hear something from when we come back. We're not going to break right now, but when we come back after this next break, General Wesley Clark, who was the Supreme Allied Commander of the Kosovo operation under Bill Clinton, I think is he a 3-star or 4-star general? I should ask my military affairs correspondent Sharon Gordy, but I think Wesley Clark wound up a 4-star general, full general. You know, there's brigadier, major, lieutenant, and then general. And he was speaking at the San Francisco, California Commonwealth Club 4 years ago. And somebody sent this to me today, this bit of video, audio and video. It runs about 10 minutes, 12 minutes. We're only going to play about 2.5, 3 minutes for you. But I want you to hear what General Wesley Clark has to say about what Cheney and Wolfowitz and the neocons who were running the country, what they had planned. And, you know, this doesn't come from some offbeat website, not because offbeat websites are necessarily wrong, but simply because this comes from a Pentagon military-industrial insider, General Wesley Clark. So I'm going to play it for you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This hour is sponsored by Mark Strecker. He has a book out about General Smedley Butler, United States Marine Corps. And you've heard me talk about Smedley Butler many times. And if you are interested in General Smedley Butler, you should consider buying the newest biography written by Mark Strecker. Excuse me, Mark, and available on Amazon.com. Check it out for real. Amazon.com. New book by Mark Strecker about General Smedley Butler, the man who originally wrote War's a Racket. All right, I want you to hear this, General Wesley Clark. And, yeah, he was a full general, four-star general. This General Wesley Clark at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, October 3rd, 2007. We'll have it in a second.
9/11 is we didn't have a strategy. Now let's, we didn't have bipartisan
agreement. Hold on if you don't mind. You got to back it up a little bit, if you can, because I want to get the whole thing in here, even if it makes mention of the network. There we go.
What happened at 9/11 is we didn't have a strategy. We didn't have bipartisan agreement. We didn't have American understanding of it. And we had instead a policy coup in this country, a coup, a policy coup. Some hard-nosed people took over the direction of American policy, and they never bothered to inform the rest of us. I went through the Pentagon 10 days after 9/11. I couldn't stay away from Mother Army. I went back there to see Don Rumsfeld. I'd worked for him as a White House fellow in the 1970s. All this is in the book. And I said, am I doing okay on CNN? He said, yeah, fine. He said, I'm thinking about it. He says, I read your book. And he said, this is a book that talks about the Kosovo campaign. And he said, I just want to tell you, he said, nobody's going to tell us where or when we can bomb. Nobody. He said, I'm thinking of calling this a floating coalition. What do you think about that? I said, well, sir, thanks for reading my book. And, he said, thanks. That's all the time I've got. Really? And I went downstairs. I was leaving the Pentagon, and an officer from the Joint Staff called me into his office and said, I want you to know, he said, sir, we're going to attack Iraq. And I said, why? He said, we don't know. He said, I said, well, did they tie Saddam to 9/11? He said, no. He said, but I guess it's they don't know what to do about terrorism, and so they think, but they can attack states. And they want to look strong, and so I guess they think if they take down a state, it will intimidate the terrorists. And, you know, it's like that old saying, he said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, then every problem has to be a nail. Well, I walked out of there pretty upset. And then we attacked Afghanistan. I was pretty happy about that. We should have. And then I came back to the Pentagon about 6 weeks later. I saw the same officer. I said, why haven't we attacked Iraq? We still going to attack Iraq? He said, oh, sir. He says, it's worse than that. He said, he pulled up a piece of paper off his desk. He said, I just got this memo from the Secretary of Defense's office. It says we're going to attack and destroy the governments in seven countries in 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. I said, seven countries in 5 years. I said, is that a classified memo? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. He was about to show it to me. He said, because I want to talk about it. And I sat on this information for a long time, for about 6 or 8 months. I was so stunned by this, I couldn't begin to talk about it. And I couldn't believe it would really be true, but that's actually what happened. These people took control of the policy in the United States. And I realized then, it came back to me, a 1991 meeting I had with Paul Wolfowitz. You know, in 2001 he was Deputy Secretary of Defense, but in 1991 he was the Under Secretary of Defense for Policy. It's the number three position in the Pentagon. And I had gone to see him when I was a one-star general. I was commanding the National Training Center. I had met him one time. He said, if you ever get to Washington, come look me up. They always say that. Well, I was there in Washington. It was a Friday afternoon. I'd visited Colin Powell. He'd given me 5 minutes of his precious time and sent me on my way. And I was bored in the Pentagon. And I thought, I'll just go, who can I see? I think I'll see Wolfowitz. So I called and up there. He was available. Scooter Libby came to the door. I met Scooter for the first time. And he brought me in. And I said to Paul, I said, and this is 1991, I said, Mr. Secretary, you must be pretty happy with the performance of the troops in Desert Storm. And he said, well, yeah, he said, but not really, he said, because the truth is we should have gotten rid of Saddam Hussein, and we didn't. And this was just
all right, this goes on for another 5 or 6 minutes, but the part I want you to hear there is what General Wesley Clark was told in a classified document. What the plan was, seven countries in 5 years. No provocation necessary. We're just going to attack them and destroy them. And as Donald Rumsfeld said, General Wesley Clark quotes Rumsfeld as saying, nobody's going to tell us when and where we can or can't bomb. Now, you can find that. It's out there on the internet's. General Wesley Clark, San Francisco, California, October 2007 at the Commonwealth Club. From Prairie 2, the grass is greener today, but it hides snakes. He writes, the stock market was up a solid 3% today on the announcement of a Eurobank deal and better-than-expected growth in U.S. GDP. Banks holding Greek bonds are going to take a voluntary haircut of 50%, and the voluntary aspect is important. That should keep the avalanche from starting on Mount Derivatives of Doom, estimated to be from $600 trillion to $1.4 quadrillion in potential payoffs, that is, if things start to unravel. Right-wingers always say there are counterparties to derivatives and it will all balance out. If that were really true, there would be no point of having them to begin with. It really is a wild combination of high-stakes poker and Russian roulette, although it's never the rich bankers whose brains get splattered on the wall. They just keep the pot. The growth of U.S. GDP was better than expected, and if maintained next quarter, this would be great news, with the caveat that we still don't have policies for manufacturing, trade tariffs, energy production, infrastructure, progressive taxes, or any of the other things we need to bring back the middle class. The Consumer Price Index showed only 0.3% inflation in September, which was down from August. If you eliminate food and fuel, it shows core inflation was only 0.1%, and this is not good. It means that wages are still flat at best and probably falling for many Americans. This again brings us to the edge of deflation and the collapse of economic activity. This is echoed in the continuing high number of unemployment claims last week. The government could easily give the economy the boost it needs by direct loans to small business, enforcement of the Buy America Act for federal government purchases, and by increasing the income of the bottom half of its citizens. An increase in the minimum wage, as well as in transfer payments, as the right calls them, which is short for wealth transfer, but in transfer payments such as Social Security, welfare, veterans benefits. Raising the wages of all lower-paid government workers would also provide an immediate increase in demand. This would need to be followed immediately by reversing everything Republicans have pushed through since 1947 when they created the so-called right to work, which really means right to work for less states, on up through the Reagan tax cuts and Clinton trade and Wall Street reforms, so-called. It is also essential to break up all the big banks and corporations, eliminate monopolies like Walmart, McDonald's, big media, and on and on. It's going to take more than a few thousand people occupying a park to change these things. But if we don't make these changes, any gains, if there are any, will be reversed. And worse. Get used to being a feudal serf or fight back. Prairie2.com. And yeah, Prairie 2, I left out a short paragraph there about QE3. I don't have any idea. I mean, I know that that's a term that has to do with what? Cash? Money? Fed? You know, whatever. What else we got here? Oh, we're going to open the phone lines. No, not yet. Not yet. Because I want to share with you something Bob Alexander has sent to me, his latest moment. I don't know if he calls that a moment any longer. I still call it a moment with Bob. But we'll do that a little bit later in the program. And when we come back, something very interesting from London, from the Occupy London. Occupy London has been, I'll just share it with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Gotta love that kid. 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Mark Strecker. And he writes, those interested in Major General Smedley Butler should consider buying the newest biography, Smedley D. Butler, USMC, written by Mark Strecker. It's available at Amazon.com. Thank you, Mark. Good luck with the book. Thanks for sponsoring the hour. And the whole program tonight is dedicated to Scott Olson, the Marine veteran who was shot in the head by Oakland police two nights ago for exercising the very right that he went to, that he thinks, and most of America thinks, he went to Iraq to defend. A top cleric at the famous St. Paul's Cathedral in London resigned today in support of the Occupy protests taking place in front of his church. How about this? Giles Fraser, the church's canon chancellor, announced via Twitter that he was stepping down, quote, with great regret and sadness, end quote. He had split with church leaders over the demonstrators' right to camp out in front of the cathedral as part of the Occupy London Stock Exchange protests, one of several offshoots of the Occupy movement in this country. Mr. Fraser backed the protesters, asking police to leave them alone when they first congregated on the cathedral steps 2 weeks ago. But the dean of St. Paul's, Graham Knowles, closed the church on Friday, citing, of course, safety concerns, and has asked protesters to leave. According to CNN, Mr. Knowles said the cathedral is consulting lawyers on possible legal measures to evict the demonstrators. Remember when the church was sanctuary? God. Fraser, the chancellor who resigned, Fraser told The Guardian of the UK his conscience dictated that he resign rather than participate in such evictions. He said, quote, I cannot support using violence to ask people to clear off the land. It is not about my sympathies or what I believe about the camp. I support the right to protest. And in a perfect world, we could have negotiated. But our legal advice was that this would have implied consent. End quote. His move was prompted, or has prompted, an outpouring of appreciation from the demonstrators. One told the Telegraph, quote, the fact that he is standing by his values shown through his resignation is really so important to us. We have a lot of respect for him. He's an honorable man, end quote. Fraser seems to be an interesting figure. The Guardian has a profile that describes this 47-year-old cleric as, quote, bald, jovial, worldly, ferociously bright, but genial towards those within the fractious Church of England who disagree with him, end quote. A protest organizer told Time magazine he can't believe safety is really the church's real motivation for opposing the demonstrations, since they have cooperated with fire officials' requests to make sure they are not a hazard. This is from Slate. So the top cleric, or one of the top clerics at St. Paul's Cathedral, the church's canon chancellor, has resigned. In effect, showing through his resignation, showing his support for the Occupy London protesters. Oh my goodness, almost makes me want to convert. We have talked many times about a general strike in this country and the fact that it's damn near impossible to try to organize such an event. A general strike meaning people just stop doing whatever they're doing, whether they're workers, students, military, it doesn't make any difference, that on a given day, that in order to throw oneself into the machine, as Mario Savio recommended 45 years ago, 47 years ago, because the operation of the machine has become so vile, so odious, and so corrupt that it has to be stopped. To do that has, up to this point, been a seeming impossibility to get everyone in this country, or enough people in this country. It would take tens of millions of us, if not a couple of hundred million, to do this. But the possibility now is growing, and I have two intersecting points of view on this. This is one of the things that Bob Alexander has written about, and we'll share that with you when we come back. And it's also comes from a blogger, an internet blogger, and I don't have his or her name here, but we'll see. When we come back, we'll share both of these with you, and also we might even take some phone calls. Well, we've been taking phone calls way more than we normally do on this program the past week or so. And the number here, for reference when we do open the lines, the number is 877-996-2556. So stick around as we get through this break. We'll come back and have hour two. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program, which is dedicated tonight to Scott Olson, the Iraq veteran who was shot down by Oakland police last night. From Bob Alexander, The Trick. Hey, Mike. Fade in. A newspaper reporter, hot on the trail of the meaning of Rosebud, is interviewing Mr. Bernstein, Charles Foster Kane's personal business manager. One of the things Bernstein tells the reporter, it's no trick to make a lot of money. If all you want is to make a lot of money. When I saw Citizen Kane over 40 years ago, I thought it was well-written line, but not a realistic one. It seemed like a bit of dialogue a relatively inexperienced 25-year-old Orson Welles might write for effect instead of realism. But I was a relatively inexperienced 20-year-old. Now I know it's as true as gravity. It's no trick to make a lot of money if all you want is to make a lot of money. Most people aren't capable of doing whatever it takes to make money. The problem is, some people are. It takes a unique kind of individual who can dismiss the massive air, water, and land pollution caused by pumping millions of gallons of water and thousands of tons of poisonous chemicals deep underground to get at the trillions of dollars worth of natural gas entombed in the Marcellus Shale. It takes a keen business mind to knowingly sell mortgage-backed securities filled with loans that were going to fail, while simultaneously making side bets that paid off when the toxic time bombs blew up. And soon, as the entire house of cards collapsed, taking our economy with it, these geniuses of Wall Street reaped trillions in bailouts from U.S. taxpayers and awarded themselves billions for bonuses on top of that. Socrates said over 2,000 years ago, all wars are fought for money. Over the last 60 years, the United States has spent well over $27 trillion on the military. With that kind of incentive, it still takes a special breed of businessman to line up to get a share from that bloody trough. All of these actions are prime examples of psychopaths at work. Professor Robert D. Hare, renowned in the field of criminal psychology, wrote of psychopaths, quote, lacking in conscience and empathy, they take what they want and do as they please, violating social norms and expectations without guilt or remorse, end quote. Professor Hare described psychopaths as, quote, intraspecies predators, end quote. I don't understand how they think. The same way I have no idea what is going on in the mind of a boa constrictor as it squeezes life out of its prey. But I don't need to know how a psychopath thinks. All we need to understand is that they have become our masters. The leaders and lawmakers in the government are psychopaths. The heads of the media, the military, and Wall Street are interspecies predators. They are in complete control. We are ruled by monsters. You don't think so? You can't accept the idea that our society is completely dominated by these inhuman freaks? Well, ask yourself a couple of questions. Who does the system protect? And who does the system prosecute? Right now, today, fracking gas wells are poisoning the air, people, animals, plants, land, and water. Now, you'd assume in a rational society that squad cars full of cops would have rolled up and arrested everyone involved in this process of harvesting natural gas. Clearly, the people carrying out this insane assault against the planet are guilty of dozens of crimes. But if you tried to interfere or protest an ongoing fracking operation, you'd be the ones the cops hauled off to jail. Wall Street, immensely aided by the government, committed the biggest financial fraud in human history. All the bailouts add up to more than the cost of the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the Marshall Plan, the New Deal, and the landing on the moon combined. And who's been arrested? The people protesting the corruption. And one of my favorites, in 2009, New York Times journalist David Barstow won the Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting. He wrote in the run-up to the Iraq War that every single major media network had featured pro-war, impartial experts, quote-quote, who were in fact government sock puppets from the Pentagon. Barstow's report revealed how the government, the Pentagon, and all the major television networks misled Americans into war. As Robert Evans wrote in Five Stories the Media Doesn't Want You to Know About, quote, when Barstow won the Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting in 2009, most television pundits were busy hyping swine flu. Brian Williams had the balls to report that the paper had won five Pulitzers and even mentioned the subject of three of the stories they'd won for. He just chose not to mention the one they got for pointing out that he is a government stooge. End quote. That Pulitzer Prize winning story went down the memory hole and the war criminals walk free. Do we know what the word over means? Apparently not. The other team won. They took the ball, got on the bus, and went back to their gated communities. Just because we're still wandering around the field doesn't mean there's still a game going on. The Occupy movement will last until the state moves them out. It will be brutal, it will be violent, and it will not be covered truthfully on the nightly news. Oh, there will be hundreds if not thousands of cell phone videos of the state wiping out the Occupy movement on YouTube, but the story most Americans will believe will be the one presented on their widescreen TVs. They didn't tell us the truth about Iraq. Why would we think they'll honestly cover the routing of the Occupy movement? We've got to realize that psychopaths play for keeps, and they have enough power to use it to stay in power. They don't play the right versus left game. They control the game. They push buttons to make conservatives jump one way and liberals jump another. Imagine for a moment McCain winning the presidency in 2008. Imagine the response from liberals when McCain announces the surge in Afghanistan. Imagine the response from liberals about the handling of BP's blowout in the Gulf. The talk of clean coal or revitalizing the nuclear power industry. Though it might make liberals cry, Obama's only job as our first black president was to sell us a load of crap we wouldn't have taken from John McCain. So they won. We lost. Now what? As Clinton Callahan wrote in Beware the Psychopath, My Son, quote, there are only two things that can bring a psychopath under submission. One, a bigger psychopath. Two, the nonviolent, absolute refusal to submit to psychopathic controls no matter the consequences. If individuals simply sat down and refused to lift a hand to further one single aim of the psychopathic agenda, if people refused to pay taxes, if soldiers refused to fight, if government workers and corporate drones and prison guards refused to go to work, if doctors refused to treat psychopathic elites and their families, the whole system would grind to a screeching halt. End quote. Well, it is impossible to fight established psychopaths with bigger, meaner, crazier psychopaths, so we must pursue option two. We can't follow Gandhi's charge, you must be the change you want to see in the world, because personal change doesn't equal social change. Go ahead, change yourself all you want to, because the psychopaths don't give a rat's ass about your personal growth. We must commit ourselves to the nonviolent, absolute refusal to submit to psychopathic controls, no matter the consequences. We must have a national strike for starters. We can't negotiate with people who have already won. The only thing left for us to say is no. People come up with all sorts of reasons for not unplugging from the system for one day. Most of them are financial. I don't know what to say to that. All I know is that if we continue to cooperate with the system, it will continue. When we stop, it grinds to a halt. And one more thing. If we don't deal with them now, there's something even worse than psychopaths shambling down the road toward us. Happy Halloween. Fade out. Regards, Bob Alexander. Time. the hour. So, Bob Alexander's moment there. And if you want a copy, go to tvnewslies.org, go to opednews.com, and God knows where else you will find it. We have maybe 20 million people out of work. I know the number usually bandied about by the pundits is 15 million, but it's closer to 20 million. So this comes from, I don't know if this comes from Occupy Oakland or just from a blogger. General strike November 2nd. He writes, she writes, I'm getting word via Twitter that the Oakland branch of Occupy Wall Street has finally done what I recommended as the only course of peaceful action that will matter. Well, a lot of us have recommended this. They have called for a general strike November 2nd. Why will a general strike work? Simple. It attacks the government in a lawful, peaceful manner, and the one way they cannot counteract, it cuts off their funding. You can't tax what doesn't happen, basically. This is a people's way to peacefully withdraw consent to being governed. You buy nothing. You perform no work. You do nothing that is taxable. The implicit threat is that you cut the legs out from under the government's ability to fund itself. This is an entirely lawful action. And I said in 2008 that this was the appropriate thing to be doing. Well, here you have it. One ex-Marine, a combat veteran, took a rubber round in the head. He is in stable but critical condition and may die. That was not a mistake. That was aimed fire and an intentional assassination attempt. Sorry, folks, that's facts. From 50 feet, you don't miss and hit someone in the head with these things if you're shooting for the legs or other non-vital parts. He was shot in the head by someone who aimed for the head. These projectiles are not non-lethal, and the bomb thrown by a cop at the people trying to come to his assistance after he fell wasn't tossed accidentally either. So here's the deal, folks. Do you have a pair of clankers, or are you still sporting mouse-sized Nerfs? Yeah, I know. Participating in a general strike means personal sacrifice. Well, that's how it is when you make choices. There are costs. Nothing's free, including doing nothing. 4 years of constructive consent has not brought you continued prosperity. It has not brought the economy out of the slump and employment has not returned. It has done nothing for you and everything for the scammers and fraudsters on Wall Street and in D.C. 4 years into this, and there's been no end to the fraud, no admission of what happened and who is responsible, no change, no honesty, no truth, and no prosecutions of any materiality. Yeah, I know. They're going after one former board member now. That's nice. But Obama just announced that he intends to, quote, refinance, end quote, a bunch of home mortgages again. And the primary beneficiary of doing so will be not you, but the banks, as that program includes a waiver of any fraud claims against the original mortgage so it cannot be put back on the originator of the loan. Yeah, the so-called benefits here will be small for the bank since the number of people who will qualify will be small and the damages on a fraudulent loan that is paying are zero. But fraud is still a crime, and this will make ignoring the criminal's side trivial as well. I've said that it's time to choose for the 4 years. Well, now you have a group that has thrown down the gauntlet for you and provided a date, November 2nd. Elephant-sized or mouse-size? Clankers or Nerfs? That's the question, and you will answer that question on November 2nd. And incidentally, is there no constructive response out of D.C.? Declare November 25th through the 27th as the next one, and yeah, I'll do it. No spending or work of any sort, not one damn nickel. Okay, well, there you have it. We're at 877-996-2556 if you want to get in here. Prairie 2 says, there is a small, or rather huge, problem with the general strike. The 1% are already running a parallel economy. You can't hurt them just by bringing the country to a halt. You would need to hurt them where they live. Most things that you might think would hurt them would only really hurt the rest of us. We need to take the country away from them. That will take more education and more organization than a simple strike. The always present voice of the adult, Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2. Now, I don't think that's the intent, is necessarily to hurt them, Bruce. I think what the point is to let them know that the possibility exists that there's a hurt out here with their name on it. Just to demonstrate one time the power of the people. The vanguard is out there. The Occupy movement is doing everything it can to try to involve the rest of America to wake up. Wake up. Time to say no. But at some point, it's going to take more, as people are starting to realize now, it's going to take more than a few thousand or 10,000 or 20,000 protesters at various green spaces around the country. It's going to take millions of us. And one way to kick it off would be a general strike. So I take a look around and say, what do I see? It's looking like the world's gone just a little crazy. And I don't have a
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. If you go to tvnewslies.org, for example, Bob's article is up a couple places. Go to tvnewslies.org, and if everyone posted a link to that on Twitter or Facebook, the message would go viral. Just try it. Just go ahead. Go ahead. The article is called The Trick Being Played on the 99%. And Bruce writes again, it doesn't count if nobody notices. He's talking about a one-day strike. He says you simply don't have the numbers yet. A one-day strike, even if you had many times your current numbers, would have a fraction of the effect of a major snowstorm. And that doesn't hurt the 1%. Nobody will notice. The media will either ignore you or ridicule you. It will simply make you look impotent. Don't try to storm the castle before you have the siege engines. Organize. 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 Well, I don't disagree with that. I'm saying I just don't think that it would be ignored by media if there was a one-day strike that was noticeable, has to make a dent. You're right. If nobody notices. But if, okay, it's fantasy. But so was the Occupy movement for a long time. But if you got 30 or 40 million people, about 10% of the population, 12%, to just stop. Okay, I know. The odds of that happening are slim and none. But if things get much worse, symbolic acts like a one-day strike are going to be pointless. I agree with what Bruce writes. Organize, organize, organize. Don't storm the castle without your siege engines. I get that. Well, you try saying that. I get that. Okay, to your phone calls here. Peter is in New York listening on Sirius. Hello, Peter.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because, you know, I'm absolutely outraged at what happened in Oakland with Scott Olsen. I'm not one of the protesters, but I'm calling because I wanted to let you know and everybody else know that's listening that the protests are not just limited to the people that are camping out across the world, across cities.
Mm-hmm.
People are really pissed off about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually my first call to any radio station because I'm so pissed off. And I consider myself to be a part of the 99%. And I did everything right. I'm 28 years old. I have pre-doctoral work. I'm a concert pianist. I live with my girlfriend. I have, I work 7 days a week just to barely afford my bills.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the situation that everybody else is finding themselves in. And the result of this is that the whole financial structure of the world is a mess because empathy for people has been removed.
Mm, absolutely.
And this is not just in the financial sector, but it's also towards the environment. It's everything. And when people say that they don't know what these people are protesting, they have absolutely no idea, because what's actually being protested is the lack of empathy,
mm-hmm.
the lack of society taking care of the people that really need it.
Aside from the evolutionary predisposition toward empathy, which I think has been recently discovered, otherwise the human race might have, or the human species might have hit a dead end someplace along the evolutionary track. Aside from that, two questions for you. What has destroyed empathy, A? B, what do you suggest we do?
I think what's destroyed empathy has been replaced with a disease. It's an addiction. It's an addiction for money. I personally, I don't live my life just so that I can get every dime. What you said before is totally correct. Most people are not capable of just making money for the sake of making money, because that money has, the value that money holds for people has been removed, especially in all those financial instruments that the banks created.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's just a game for them. They couldn't give, you know, they couldn't care less.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main problem.
What do you see, Peter? And let me back up. That was a point that Bob made in his essay about a psychopathic approach to making money. Just you have to be a psychopath to make it on the levels that it's being accumulated now. But what do you see as a possible solution, or a partial solution, or an advent to a solution? What do you see?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen systemically in terms of what the government is going to do. I think it's just a matter of enough people rising up. And I really feel, from what I talk to people, the way it's going is, it's sort of the situation right now, if you look historically, it's the situation a few days before World War I, when I believe it was an archduke that got assassinated and
yeah.
That started the whole thing.
Right.
So this is what's going on. The result is, it's like there's a powder keg, and that powder keg is this close to exploding, I think. And what's been seen as far as the protests are concerned are just basically the tip of the iceberg
mm-hmm.
of what's happening.
Mm-hmm. One last question. What do you think would set off the spark that would ignite that explosion?
I think what happened to Scott Olsen, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every time one of those things happen, it exponentially increases the rate at which change is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are waking up not because they're just angry, but I think they're waking up because they're starting to feel empathy. They're waking up from the feeling that they must make money just for the sake of making money and for themselves. And that if this can happen to, you know, to that guy, this can also happen to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, those are good points, good observations. And Peter, thank you very much. You said this is your first call. I hope you call this program again.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Take care.
Okay, thanks.
Prez is in Santa Rosa, California, listening on Green 960. Hello, Prez.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How are you?
Can you hear? I'm fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I want to respond to that last caller first. Boy, that was great. What a well-thought-out, reasonable approach, like a normal, adult, intelligent human being. That was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I would comment on, that's not why I called, but I want to say something about empathy. I think the people that are doing this never had it in the first place. It's not, and we, a lot of the people, have been forced to, we haven't been able to enjoy our own empathy, if you want to use that word, enjoy. You know what I mean?
Sure.
To use it as far as their human characteristics, because we've been forced to scrabble over each other for a few scraps, increasingly.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're forced to shuck our humanity. They count on that. We're kind of like reptiles. They only think about control and stuff. That leads me to my comment about, I wanted to talk about this relationship between Department of Homeland Security and all the security equipment, the militarization, and this responses. I think that not only are these just, these are not accidents, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think these things are totally localized. I think these are trial balloons, Mike. People can think what they want. In fact, conspiracy theorists doesn't mean there aren't them.
Right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There are conspiracies. And we used to breathe together, and a lot of people sit there and breathe together, like Rumsfeld or whoever, or if they breathe, or his gills are flapping. Anyway, their connection between these are trial balloons to see how we respond to these black-jacketed, no-name tags, no metal, no, you know what I mean? You can't even grab onto these guys. There's no defense, and they come like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of our conditioning, I'm afraid, and... And I would just say this, the Scott Olson thing really has me upset.
Yeah,
I was at the VA hospital today. I'm a veteran, and I go there, besides you. And I was talking to some Vietnam vets today, and we're thinking about just gearing up and getting ready, Mike, because we might have to be the second line here. We might have to get up here. I know you're a little bit older than I am, but not much. We may have to do this crap all over again, Mike.
Yeah.
I think it might... Now.
Yeah, I hear you, Prez. Listen, I'm glad you called. I hope you call again, all right? Good comments. Thanks, Rez. We'll be right back.
Radio Right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. A couple of quick emails here from Bruce Emberg again. The Occupy Wall Street movement works because it runs day in and day out and builds support. A one-day strike isn't the same. You need something that replaces the current system on a daily basis. The only way to take over is to replace the 1%. I don't have a good answer how to do that, but one must be found for us to win. Betting everything on one day is a setup for failure. Maybe a strike every Friday, every other day? I don't know. It has to be something that will attract more people every day. And from Purple Cart... Organize, organize, organize. A lot of garbage. Look what Occupy NYC has started. As Nike says, just do it. People will follow or they won't. How long are we going to wait? Till the drones are flying over us? It is getting very late. And this email, it's lacking a day. I'll just share it with you. It's from Bianca, who writes, Mike, can you please invite your Northern California Sonoma County listeners to participate in Occupy Petaluma? We will congregate at Penry Park, that's on the large hill overlooking the Bank of America, to meet and make signs, then leave them briefly to walk respectfully in Petaluma's annual Dia de los Muertos procession, where we will honor those people and ideas lost to the corporate greed machine or otherwise. After, we will meet in Penry Park to celebrate the reunion of those living in America who once were divided. We invite everyone to contribute thoughts, signs, and voices to stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters here and overseas who too have realized that there is no left, no right, just you, me, and the 99. Again, that's Penry Park, Petaluma, California, 12 noon. Bianca, but I don't know what if it's the Day of the Dead procession, the Dia de los Muertos procession. When is that celebrated, Kathy? When is All Saints Day? Monday? Tuesday? So, Dia de los Muertos, I don't know if it corresponds with, Halloween. Well, maybe, Bianca will, write back. Anyway, Northern California, Sonoma County, congregate at Penry Park, 12 noon. In Petaluma. Lonnie is in Eugene, Oregon. Hello, Lonnie.
Hi, Mike. It's an honor to speak with you. I've been listening to you for a really long time.
Oh, well, thanks. My pleasure.
So, they were talking about the, South Africa they used to call it the No Work Monday, right? A general strike mm-hmm. on a regular basis. But in 2005, I watched all the hearings maybe it was like 2005 when they were doing the Homeland Security Act. What do they call it? The Patriot Act?
Patriot Act, yeah.
Yeah. In that, they wrote in there that if you stop any major corporations from conducting business for the United States,
yeah,
you could be considered a homegrown terrorist.
That's right.
And they could conduct martial law. I don't think that should stop us.
Well, I think that they can't be talking about people staying home. Passive resistance is impossible to combat. I think what they're talking about, if you actively interfere, like if you stick yourself in the doorway of a Walmart and refuse to let people in or out, yeah, you're probably going to have a SWAT team show up and either kill you or take you away.
Yeah, but I think also that if there was like a general strike, like announced through like an organizer, they could actually I called Jane Harman's office about this actually. Mm-hmm. In those days I was really outraged. That's when I woke up in 2005 when a friend of mine's son's body got lost in Iraq after his parents came out and called Rumsfeld and mm-hmm. Cheney, all those people, criminals, right? I started paying attention because I thought to myself, I wonder if this is how the people in Germany felt when they realized Hitler was completely out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're at that place now where people are realizing they're really out of control. We have to do something, and we have to do something passively. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to attack us, and the violence, they're going to ensue with violence. That's their method of operation. They're all about murder, death, kill.
You know,
they look at us as less than human.
That is the American way. There's no question about that. The American way is violence. We have we commit violence within our own country against certain elements of our society, against certain classes of our society. That violence is perpetrated every single day, endlessly. We also
and ignored.
Yeah, it is ignored. And we also commit violence outside our borders on a scale that I don't think any other country has ever done outside of its borders. Now, I realize we're not mass killers in the sense of Stalin or Pol Pot or Mao or Hitler, but these people committed mass murder within their own borders or within their own territory. What we do is export our violence completely to the other side of the earth and murder people. And it's just insane.
Mike, but that's the violence that we can see. In my view, I don't know if you've read this book called Death by Medicine, but
I've not.
It's an awesome book. It talks about all the lies. I'm actually an insurance protester. I raise my kids without insurance. I don't believe in it. I think we should have single payer, and I refuse to pay health insurance. But the reason is I cured myself of arthritis when I was 37. I've done a lot of alternative healing. Mm-hmm. And in America, the murder, if you look, there's at least 6 million people over the last 5 or 6 years that have been killed medically. The medical industry in America does the job of the military industry does overseas.
Well, you know, that I hear that, and I know that the death rate from the pharmaceutical industrial complex to the medical industrial complex is off the chart. I know that's true. And you know what, Lonnie, at some point, some night, I want to talk about that. There's the music, which means I have to get out. This hour is over. But thanks, Lonnie. I appreciate very much your checking in with us. Stick around. This next hour, I'm not going to take any calls this next hour, but what I do want to talk about is the evolution of the Occupy movement. I just want to throw my two cents worth in and what is happening out there now. So stick around. I'm sure I'll give you things to criticize and chew apart, but I'm going to give it a shot. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This hour is sponsored by Alan Andreda. Alan Andreda. Thank you very much, Alan. The message, my birthday present for myself. You're the best, Mr. Malloy and wife. Keep on keeping on. That was sweet, huh, Kathy? Alan Andreda is our sponsor this hour, and thank you very much. It's getting to the point now, I think you're aware of this, that there are city administrations who have decided enough already with the freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. And the right wing is starting to feed that sense of it's time to bring this to a close, that a lot of big city mayors and not so big cities are starting to conclude. The agitators, people who are inspired by hate mongers and America haters like Andrew Breitbart and the Pig Man and Beck and Hannity and Bortz and the rest of these swine, are starting to show up now at the rallies. They are writing signs like, cops are pigs, and strategically placing them near the demonstrations where the media will pick up on these and start transmitting the pictures. That happened in Oakland. Here in Atlanta, a right-winger showed up at Woodruff Park the other day with an AK-47 slapped to his back and paraded around. Which, not surprisingly, I guess, or surprisingly, inspired Mayor Kasim Reed to wet his pants and immediately decide that, oh my goodness, guns! And decide to close the protest down using police force and arresting scores of people here. I don't have to tell you what has been going on in Oakland, although last night in Oakland, After about an hour of speeches, the 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people who showed up took down the fences that had isolated the area where the encampment had been. The demonstration remained peaceful, as these demonstrations will continue to do until such time as violence will beget violence. I mean, these are Americans. These are young people. These are and not so young. These are people who are there not because, like the teabaggers or the right wing scum, like the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization. They're not there because people are paying them to be there, or organizations like the Koch brothers are funding it, swine like the right wing are running around with their hair on fire, organizing what appear to be legitimate protests or nothing more than the works of tricksters, like this filthy Andrew Breitbart. The people in the Occupy movement are there because they want to give their country one more chance to wake up, one more chance for the government authorities, not the capitalists or the corporatists, the government authorities, even though these protesters, I think, fully realize that most government authority is wholly owned, or at least partially owned, by the predatory capitalists. You can see this happening every single day, every single activity taken by this administration, the Obama administration, every single non-activity taken by the Republicans in the House and the Senate, who are determined to destroy America. So the young people are there because they're trying to give the United States one more chance. And the fact that people are listening, I think, is evident in all the polls that are taken. Most of the people agree with the issues that the Occupy movement has finally presented in front of the American public, because media are not going to do it. They're not going to present the issues in totality the way the Occupy movement has done. And it is amusing on the one hand, and just disgustingly stupid on the other, that there are still people on the right and in media wandering around saying, well, what do they want? They don't have any issues. Where's the list of demands? I mean, the stupidity level in this country is just off the chart. But what is happening now is what I think a lot of people in the movement are aware had a very good chance, if good is the right word, of happening. And that is the infiltration now of provocateurs, people who are put there by, in some instances, government agencies, not the least of which, of course, would be the FBI. The FBI that almost single-handedly decided to murder the leadership of the Black Panther movement back in the 60s and 70s and damn near succeeded. So now this, the infiltration of the Occupy movement by agents provocateur who are there to disrupt, to justify police who are Pavlovian in their responses to a huge crowd of people chanting, and at the first provocation of somebody throwing a rock, will respond with tear gas canisters, flashbang grenades, concussion grenades, rubber bullets. This is what the Occupy movement has deliberately, consciously stayed away from. And this is what the provocateurs are now injecting into it. And I will guarantee you that these provocateurs, although they will probably never be identified, are organized, recruited, hired, trained, and paid by the Koch brothers or their equivalent. The Occupy movement has gotten too popular. It has caught the attention of too many Americans. It is coalescing the rage and the anger and the frustration that has been developing over the past 25 or 30 years because of the unbridled greed of these filthy, filthy capitalists who are destroying the country. Well, they're not going to just sit back. Well, surely we didn't expect them to sit back and say, oh, well, 1,000 people there, 2,000 there, a march here, 700 there. All of a sudden, the Occupy movement is in 1,000 American cities and towns and spreading across the globe. We have to stop this quick. What's the best way to stop it? Sit down, negotiate a way out of this by returning the country or taking the country to, not returning. We've never been there. Taking the country to a form of social democracy, a just system, or you want to try something else. Well, what's number two? Number two, release the dogs. Send in a private military, or the U.S. military, or the state police. Okay, that could get a little bit bloody. What's number three? Number three, infiltrate and destroy from within. We've done it before, the capitalists will say. We did it to the student movement. We did it to the anti-war movement. We almost succeeded in the civil rights movement. Hell, we can handle these people. We don't have a Martin Luther King or a Bobby Kennedy to murder. Damn it. But we can infiltrate. We can get people into these various organizations. These are just a bunch of dumb, peace-loving hippie types. You know, their grandparents were hippies, or their parents. What do these kids know, right? This will be easy. Where's Breitbart? Let's get Breitbart in here. Let's have a sit-down with Neil Bortz and with Rush Limbaugh and with the rest of these people, these right-wing media bastards. Come on, we can figure out how to whip these occupiers. The hour. So once again, the danger zone now for the Occupy movement is to be able to neutralize those people who are being sent to disrupt what has gone on for the past month with acts of phony violence. The right-wing establishment in this country is no more going to roll over and stick its legs in the air and play dead than Barack Obama is going to work for social justice. It's just not going to happen. So the way they are responding, like I said, there are three different ways they could respond. Send in the private thugs, sit down and negotiate towards social justice and social democracy, or hire the agents provocateurs, which they have decided to do. For now, no telling what the next move will be. Now, how to isolate and neutralize the provocateurs, I don't know. My reaction would be entirely different from the Occupy movement, because the Occupy movement is built around civil disobedience that does not involve doing violence to anybody or anything. And I, you know, fully respect that. I remember the three or four times I've seen the movie Gandhi. The one with, who played Gandhi, Kathy? Who? Yeah, Ben Kingsley. Well, that version where Gandhi and his backers would present themselves to the power structure, the Indian people who had sold themselves to the British, and the beatings, that would just be beat down after beat down. And of course, eventually, you could say that Gandhi won. There was an awful lot of bloodshed, but the British were thrown out. Now, I admire that kind of resistance. And I think it does demonstrate a kind of power that people with clubs will never understand. But I also understand my own makeup, my own weaknesses. And I don't think I'm capable of appearing in a or participating or showing up for a demonstration anywhere. Anywhere where I'm peacefully assembling, petitioning Congress for redress of grievances, or exercising my First Amendment free speech rights, and be put upon by thugs, by provocateurs, or see a provocateur deliberately trying to cause a reaction from the quasi-military big city police departments and not react strongly. I don't think I could do that. And, you know, I'm kind of ashamed of that. I wish I had gotten to the point where I could transcend my own inclination towards violence when I feel like I am being attacked or led into something that will result in my being attacked, something I didn't do. The Occupy movement are a much stronger moral character than I am, and I'll concede that. So it's difficult for me to understand or it's difficult for me to discuss rationally what I think the Occupy movement should do. I can't do it. It's not my discussion to hold anyway. All I can say is that were I part of the Occupy movement and discovered a provocateur within my midst, my inclination would be to just beat the living hell out of him. Seriously, I'm sorry. I have to apologize for that on one level. And on another level, I just have to say, well, I'm just an unenlightened being. That's all. If I would meet a Breitbart-like character who was determined to continue his destructive lies, and it was in a situation where I could witness that destruction going on, I simply could not do nothing. That character would have to deal with me in a rage. Now, you know, I know this. I'm not trying to sound all macho big tough ass. No, not at all. Because I'm really not. What I'm saying simply is, I know what my limits are. I know what my physiological or my psychological makeup is, and I can't. I couldn't do that. And as I watch people in the Occupy movement. And this is the point I'm trying to get to. I'm sorry it's taken so long. I watch people in the Occupy movement who continue to operate within those parameters of civil disobedience, not criminal activity, but civil disobedience and passive resistance. And I watch now we have a veteran, 26 years old or 24 years old, who did two tours committing God knows what kind of activity for capitalist America. And now we see him being smashed in the head by a police tear gas canister and critically wounded. This is not good.
It'll be our secret.
It's 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Alan Andrada. Andrada? Alan Andrada. Thank you, Alan. The message from Alan, my birthday present for myself. You're the best, Mr. Malloy, and wife, keep on keeping on. That's you. You are and wife. I like that. I like that. Thanks, Alan. So what to do with the fact that the Occupy movement now is being attacked in the way liberation movements are always attacked at first, and that is with infiltrators, people who try to present themselves as part of the movement and are there because the right wing sends them in to do damage, do destruction, to discredit an otherwise completely legitimate, organic movement. I don't know. I don't have any answers. This is how the right wing in this country works, the way it's always worked. It's the way the fascists work anywhere on earth, actually. But in this country, with our advertising and public relations monster that has been created to sell the American people crap and junk that that we don't need and has bankrupted us now. That marketing machine, that advertising machine, that PR machine knows exactly what to do and is doing it. This is a part that that is upsetting to someone my age who has witnessed a whole rainbow of protest movements over the past 40 years. It's this. These young people who may be participating in their first act of righteous protest or civil disobedience may not understand immediately or in time that they are being infiltrated now by people who want to smash them into the ground, just smash them. And the way it's manifesting is through the actions of local mayors, local city councils, police departments, where the city authorities are starting to say, okay, that's enough. You kids have had your fun. We get the point. Interestingly, the authorities always move against the protesters, the people seeking justice, social justice. And very seldom, except for one or two high-profile cases, do they move against the capitalist bastards who are causing this. Ever notice that? But that's not a newsflash. You know, we've talked about it so many times. The business of the establishment in this country is more business, and that business has to be predatory. It has to be the kind of business that collects power. Always power, financial, political, industrial, into the hands of a few. Always fewer and fewer hands. And eventually at the top, of course, they start devouring themselves as they seek more and more power, more and more consolidated power. But that's the design. That's the way it is supposed to be. Consequently, when city authorities finally get to the point where, okay, kids, that's enough. That's enough. You made your point. They move in and the violence begins. But the business of America is business, and that means capitalism. We've talked about this before, that in most newspapers, if not all newspapers, you will find, you know, a news section, an arts and entertainment section, and then you find a sports section, and you find a business section. Do you ever find a labor section? Ever find a section in a newspaper devoted to the struggles of the working class or the middle class? No. But you will find a section of the newspaper devoted exclusively to the inner workings of capitalism. Page after page after page to tell you about who are the winners and who are the losers. And, you know, if you ever sit down and read that and you think, well, why is this news? I don't have anything to do with this. I don't make these decisions. Oh, yeah, I've got a few stock in AT&T or something, but I don't have anything to do with any of this. Why is there a whole section of the newspaper devoted to the Machiavellian inner workings of capitalism and the corporations as they eat each other and move up the food chain and then fall down the food chain and make decisions that are going to affect a first grade class someplace in a little town in Oklahoma, because all of a sudden that first grade class can't get any necessary school supplies or books or enough teachers because somebody, a group of somebody's capitalist pigs, made decisions 1,500 miles away that destroyed a financial setup that had its tentacles all the way back to the little village in a little town in Oklahoma, where the teachers now have to be let go because there's no tax revenue and they can't afford books. That's how it works. And the people who make those decisions that destroy the school, the classroom out in some little town in Oklahoma, those people, they're never hurt. Never. Even when they fail massively, when they totally screw up, these corporate execs, what do they leave with? Millions. They are paid for failure. Failure is part of the game. Now, if you fail, you're screwed. If you stumble even the slightest, you'll lose your house. You'll get a divorce. You'll lose your savings. You'll lose everything. You'll lose respect. But the people who game and run the system in this country, there's no such thing as losing. Losing is winning. Winning is winning. But losing is always winning. And you ever notice, if you screw up real bad, so suppose you're a mechanic. Let's just do it this way. You're an auto mechanic. And, you know, you've been working around for 10 years, and you got a pretty good reputation. People bring their cars to you. You know, you're making a pretty good living, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, right? You're doing just fine. Thank you very much. And all of a sudden, you start saying to yourself, you know, why should I use this particular widget? I think I'll use that particular widget the next time I put a transmission back together. And you do that a couple of times, and a couple of cars lose their transmissions at 80 miles an hour and on a freeway, and the driver loses control, and the car spins, and people die. Blah, 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 blah. You get my point. That would probably be it for you as far as being a mechanic. Plus, you'd have to suffer going probably a civil lawsuit, if not criminal charges. But if you're a corporate capitalist titan, you can destroy the lives of as many people as you want to destroy. You can cause people to commit suicide. You can actually hire death squads in different countries to go stop union movements that might interfere with your business plan. You can do all this. Plus, you can practically bankrupt your company. You can drive it into the ground until somebody else comes along to lift it up. And then when it's time for that person to step in, well, it's time for you to go. But, of course, you've got your contract where you walk away with $30 million. And people wonder what the Occupy movement is about? The only reason people wonder what the Occupy movement is about, or misrepresent it, is because they are either dumb sons of bitches of the highest order, or they are like Neil Bortz and Andrew Breitbart and the rest of these thugs. They are provocateurs. They sow dissent. They sit wherever they sit and watch all this, content, like Scrooge McDuck, to run their hands through their millions. They don't give a goddamn. To them, this is sport. Let's see some violence in the streets. I'm getting bored. You know, I used to be able to get it from the NFL on Sunday. Can't do it anymore. Come on, you goddamn hippies. Get out there. Do something. Come on, cops. Beat their asses. This is the organizing principle of the programs put on the air, hosted by people like Bortz, Limbaugh, Hannity, Breitbart, Beck, the rest of these swine. They're bored. The millions just don't cut it anymore. Meanwhile, the capitalists, the upper one-tenth of 1%, who look at these media millionaire right-wingers as just so many useful idiots and swine, they see them as swine, too. They just kind of say, well, go ahead, stir them up. Whatever you guys do, go ahead and do it. We don't care. We're so far, we, one-tenth of 1% who own everything, we're so far above this melee, this slime down here where all you people, you know, you agitators and you right-wingers and you poor social justice seekers and you occupiers, the whole thing to these people in the upper one-tenth of 1%, the whole thing is a massive game. It's fun to watch. It's fun to sit in your suite and watch the hippies and the homeless and the kids and the occupiers and the people without jobs and the people who've lost their homes and the people whose unemployment is running out. Watch them down there, this swirling, squirming mass of useless human beings. It's great fun to watch.
He went to fight wars for his country and his king, of his honor and his glory. The people would sing. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was.
For the hour, and thanks to Alan Andreda, who is the sponsor of this hour. Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it very, very much. His message, my birthday present for myself, you are the best, Mr. Malloy, and wife, keep on keeping on. That's very kind. Thanks, Alan. The reasons that are being given for city officials now cracking down. You like that? Like back in the old days of slavery, get the bullwhip out. Crack down! Wham! The reason they're cracking down is because, you know, on the one hand, they'll say, oh, yeah, well, we certainly respect, especially the black big city mayors. Yeah, oh, yeah, we respect the right to peacefully assemble and the right of freedom of speech and the right of petition for redress of grievance. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, we respect all that. We know, especially we African-American mayors and city council members. And yeah, yeah, we fully understand. But they are increasingly concerned, they say, that the protests cannot stay orderly and safe. Now, where does that come from? That was the reason that Kasim Reed ordered the removal of several hundred people here in Atlanta and the rest of 50 or 60 people. Where does that come from? That idea that, well, yeah, you know, it's peaceful now, but what about later? Huh? Well, you know, the house is intact now, but what about later? It might burn down. So we better bring out the fire department and surround the house and wait. What was that movie, Kathy, about crimes that were going to be committed? Minority Report. Y'all remember Minority Report? Remember that movie? Wasn't that John? It was Travolta in that? And a couple of psychic individuals floating in a pool, and they would have visions, and Isn't that what the big city mayors are saying now? Well, there may be violence, so what we're going to do now, that works perfectly. It dovetails very nicely with what the provocateurs are doing now, what the Andrew Breitbarts and the Neil Bortzes and inspiring the right-wing crazy people to load up their six guns or their AK-47s and walk into the crowd so the cops will see them, or write F the pigs or whatever, and get it out there so media will see it, so the mayors will see it, because the mayors are busy with the business of being busy. But eventually they'll see it. And then let's start the whole thing over at the Rupert Murdoch Terror Network. Let's start this whole thing on the website about, well, this is all being run by Acorn. But you all told me Acorn was dead a couple of months ago. Oh, no, don't. That was then. This is now. You ever heard of Goldstein? Haven't you ever read 1984? Now it's Acorn. What? What? And as Steve Jobs told Rupert Murdoch at one point, it's in the book, Walter Isaacson's book, that Murdoch was a destructive force for the society. And that the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Network, a.k.a. Fox, was a destructive force. You know, if a group of armed foreigners came into this country and they were identified as a destructive force, we would eliminate them, wouldn't we? Of course we would. We would send in a squad of Marines or a few Rangers or some soldiers of some sort and surround them and either kill them or capture them and send them back wherever they came from or, you know, do something. And yet we allow in our midst a destructive force like the Fox News Channel and all the vermin who work there, who constantly and continuously pump agitprop into the collective consciousness. And when that's not good enough, then they start sending out provocateurs. What are you suggesting, Mr. Malloy, that the provocateurs are being sent by Rupert Murdoch? Well, you never know, do you? But we do know that on the Fox News webpage, and it wound up, a link to it wound up on AOL's front page the other day, an entire article saying that Acorn is behind Occupy movements. Acorn is this, Acorn is that. They're paying homeless people $10 an hour to go relieve themselves on public streets. The kind of agitprop that Fox and Murdoch and Hannity and O'Reilly and this filthy team of idiots in the morning have become famous for doing. And here they're doing it again and again and again. If a foreign destructive force came to this country, we would eliminate that force very quickly, wouldn't we? Why don't we do the same with the Rupert Murdoch terror organization? Why is that not surrounded, neutralized, and silenced?
Oh, Mike, are you advocating the elimination of free speech? Golly gee, you must be a communist!
Well, you consider it yourself. Truth seeker and right-wing troll that monitors the program, you consider it yourself. What would you, especially you right-wing filth, what would you do if there was a destructive force inside this country? I mean, you people see Acorn as a destructive force. You see justice as a destructive force. But if a real one came, what would you do? I'll see you tomorrow night, all right? Take care. Oh, by the way, tomorrow night is going to be our Halloween program. How about that? I'll see you then. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.